This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Merrill. Merrill exists to give you all you really need to discover the simple yet profound power of the trail. They believe the trail is for everybody and everybody. Merrill's goal is to provide thoughtfully designed, rigorously tested products that over-deliver on performance, versatility, and durability. Because when you've got air in your lungs and good shoes on your feet, you've got everything you need. My first pair of Merrells were trail runners that I bought to explore the old rail beds of New Hampshire that have been turned into bike paths. I've since worn them on forest beds and even up the occasional mountain when I don't need the extra ankle support. I also got to recently test the Ontario Waterproof mid-hiking boots, which rise a little higher but have the lightness and flexibility of a trail runner. I'm excited to take them up the White Mountains this summer for overnights and everything in between. Stay tuned for more stories with Merrill this spring and summer. And to learn more in the meantime, visit Merrill.com. That's Merrell.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
And so I came into this industry not as an athlete, not working for another major brand. No one knew who I was. So they were like, well, who are you even to think that you can do this? You can't even do it. So that just gave me a lot more fuel to prove them wrong.
This is Jen Gorecki, CEO of Coalition Snow, editor-in-chief at Sisu Mag, host of the Juicy Bits podcast, and founder of Zawadisha. The first question I have for you is whether or not you're someone who gets bored easily.
I think the answer to that question is yes, I do get bored easily, which is absolutely why I do so many things.
With 20 years of experience in the outdoor industry and 4 companies, I think, under her belt, it feels safe to call Jen a serial entrepreneur. Today, she runs Coalition Snow, which makes women's skis and snowboards, and is the editor-in-chief at Sisu Magazine, a beautiful quarterly print magazine whose mission is telling untold stories of the outdoors. These two ventures have more in common than meets the eye. Jen's feminist worldview is an invisible thread that runs through both and serves to strengthen their foundations. When I caught up with Jen, it was April, and she was getting restless. Somehow, even running 2 startups, she makes room in her life for these epic bike tours. I guess that's not too surprising. She does call herself an adventure addict. Last year, she spent 70 days cycling across Africa. And when I was talking with her, it was going to be 3 weeks until she headed to Nepal for another bike tour, which she had very little planned of so far. Jen and 2 friends figured out their general route they were going to take in Nepal, but wanted to hire a local woman guide if possible. When we talked, it was all very up in the air.
But we don't necessarily know the condition of the roads. Like, can we cycle on them? Are we going to be hiking our bike? Are there going to be sections where we're going to have to check our bikes, you know, on local buses? And we're not really clear about that, but we do know the route that we would like to take.
Do you consider yourself a planner generally?
I do. I would planning around the things that you need to plan. So, you know, for example, I don't think that you should go on a multi-day cycling tour and not have a map of where you would like to go. So, you know, we have some of those pieces in place, but then other things, you know, like I'm just going to trust that we will be able to find a place to sleep every night, that there's somewhere or some kind human who will allow us to sleep each night. So we don't, you know, there's little things like that that we don't have planned, but I plan some things and other things I just leave up to fate.
Do you take a similar approach with your companies?
Absolutely. I think that's obvious. there's always this sort of this like bigger vision, right? And the decisions that you make and the course that you take is ideally moving you toward that greater vision. I think what's really difficult about trying to plan every single piece is that, number one, you miss out on opportunities that might present themselves. It also, for me, takes away from the curiosity and the exploration that you can even have on the business side of things. And also things move really quickly in the business world. So while you can have sort of like a broad strategic plan in terms of like, we know that we want to reach X number of people or sell X number of skis, and we're going to use these different channels to do it. When you get right down to the nitty gritty, I think that you have to be really fluid and flexible with that. And so you have to have some plan, but also just be open to allowing things to unfold as well.
How averse are you or not averse are you to risk taking then?
I think I'm pretty open to it. I can tolerate a high level of risk in a lot of things that I do, both personally and professionally.
So let's go back. You've been part of the outdoor industry for 20 years.
I have, yeah.
Jen's first job in the outdoor industry was tuning skis at Arizona Snow Bowl at Flagstaff.
I worked on the mountain and I started in the repair shop and then was able to learn how to use the Steiger and tune skis and boards. And so I started working there when I was 18, and that was my very first job in the outdoors. And then when I graduated from college, I subsequently ended up moving to Lake Tahoe and got much more involved in the outdoor education side of things.
What did you major in college?
I have a degree in print journalism that they no longer offer because they say it's an irrelevant degree. So that they tore down the building and they don't offer the degree. So that feels good. That feels really good. And then I graduated when I was 21 and I didn't want to go get a job. And so I went back to school to get a teaching credential because that's what my parents did. And they were like, this is a good job. You should do it. So I thought like, okay, I'll do a teaching credential. And then I finished that and I thought to myself, there's no way I'm going to go into a classroom Monday through Friday. That's not going to happen. But that teaching credential lends itself really well to being able to get a professional job on the outdoor ed side of things. So at some level, it served me there, but I've never taught in a traditional classroom, except for at the college level I have. But I never actually have taught high school. I thought I would for maybe like 6 months. I thought maybe I would.
Back when you were 21, 22.
Yeah, I just didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I still barely know what I'm doing, but definitely, I mean, definitely at 21, I didn't know. And, you know, my parents were teachers and, you know, it was all about like, go to school, get a good job, have a profession that is reliable and consistent. And I was 21 and I just wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And with my degree in journalism, I had worked in a newsroom and I also just didn't like the energy of that. And so I knew that I loved the outdoors and that there seemed to be this way to have a professional position on the outdoor ed side. And it was really nice from the flexibility in terms of the hours and the days and then all the expeditions I was able to go on. But I feel like it took me at least 10, if not like 15 years to feel sort of grounded professionally in the industry.
Why did it take so long, and two, what made you feel grounded?
Well, I feel like my entire 20s was just about trying to figure out who I was. And I think that that's normal for most people, is just you're like learning about yourself and considering what it is that you want to do. And, you know, this also was like pre Instagram and pre Facebook and pre people supporting women in business. And, you know, like the world's a very different place now than when I was in my 20s. And, you know, I didn't necessarily see a lot of women who were doing things that I was interested in. So I felt I didn't really have a lot of people to look up to, I suppose.
Yeah.
And so it just took me longer. And then also I just knew that I never wanted to play by the rules. Like, I'm just not interested in what it is that you're supposed to do. So also trying to figure out, well, how do I stay true to myself and figure out what it is that I want while also not like fully pissing off my family, who like isn't super into my life choices. And then there's not really anybody who totally gets what I want to do. And so I think that I was like trying to figure that out. And so getting in, you know, working on the nonprofit side and the education side, like at some level was accepted. And it was something that I knew how to do because I had that background in teaching and I had my love of the outdoors, and that made a lot of sense to me. But I also never was really fulfilled in it. Because, well, let's just be clear. I shouldn't necessarily be spending every single day with minors. I think that's obvious for a lot of reasons. So that was, I did, like, I feel like I did my job really well. And I got to do some really amazing things. You know, I worked for UC Berkeley and was running this program called Adventure Risk Challenge, which I'm proud to say still exists and has incredible leadership and is doing really amazing things for youth in the outdoors. And I got to do incredible things like work in Yosemite, and I got to work in Santa Barbara and in Sequoia and Lake Tahoe, and all of that just sort of added to my life experience. But I never really felt like it was my calling. And perhaps that's what I was always searching for.
And your calling, do you believe that it was to be an entrepreneur?
I believe so now. Yeah. I mean, I've done enough business things. And I love the business side of things. I mean, the very, very first business that I started had nothing to do with the outdoors. I screen printed panties. I called it Pantyline Productions. And I'm super proud that I made it into Bust magazine. Once I made it into Bust. And I started Pantyline when George Bush was our president and we were going to war. And so I thought it'd be really clever to screen print "The only Bush I trust is my own" on hers. And then that's what I did. And then I expanded my line to include.
Okay, I'm cutting in here to keep the episode relatively PG, but these underwear were super clever and very Jen.
This was like right when Etsy got started and the whole idea of like handmade and crafting, like all the fairs and all of that was like just starting to happen. So that was really exciting to be a part of that movement right at the beginning. But I didn't know anything about business. I just really liked to create things. And so I had some success, but then, you know, when you don't know what you're doing in business, essentially it's just kind of a hobby. And so I didn't, you know, I did that for a couple years and really more focused on my career at Berkeley. And then when I had the opportunity, well, actually, then I ended up starting a business in Kenya. And that was really, I think, the first time that I took business very seriously and knew a lot more what to do. And then, you know, subsequently owned a whitewater rafting company. And then now there's Coalition Snow and the magazine that we just started. So I've done a couple things.
Yeah. And the company in Kenya still exists today.
It does. Yeah. So when I started it, I had this vision to hire all local Kenyan women to run the operations. And it took a couple years to get that dialed. But, you know, we have an office and have a small plot of land. And we have an entire local Kenyan team that runs all the operations. And my official capacity is as a board member now. And that's how I support them on the fundraising side. And I'm, you know, fortunate enough to be able to still go to Kenya a few times a year and spend time with the team there, which is such an honor. And really, you know, Kenya's a second home to me. So
What was one, what does that company do? And two, what was the catalyst for starting that company?
Yeah. So the company's name is Zawadisha, and it's actually a social enterprise. It's a hybrid. So we have nonprofit status here, and then we're a for-profit in Kenya. And that's just all around like all the different ways that you can bring revenue in. And the reason why I started it is I was working on my master's degree and I was doing research to compare bottom-up approaches of social change to top-down approaches. And I was really curious about what African women specifically thought about the policies and the perspectives of the World Bank and the IMF and how those two were either in alignment or not. And so I did my research in Kenya and I gave cameras to a group of 13 women and asked them to take photos of their lives and write captions to write stories about it. And then I also did the same thing in Nicaragua. And then I compared the two in terms of like what were sort of the lived experiences of women in these two areas. And I, for a lot of reasons, had more of an affinity to Kenya, which is where I ended up spending more time. And there's, you know, in academia, it's really quite normal for people to conduct research and essentially like extract knowledge from that continent and bring it back to the Western world and use it to either further their career or advance, air quotes, knowledge. And I just felt like I had a capacity to do something to support the women there that helped me in essentially writing my thesis and, you know, being able to have this master's degree that allowed me to even get a job at Berkeley. And so I, you know, what I learned from their stories, went back to them and asked them, you know, if they wanted to co-create a project together. And we spent a couple days just sort of hashing out what an income generating program would look like for them. This was before microlending was popular. This was pre-Kiva. And I created a very small microlending program that has now evolved into where we are serving thousands of women in a very, very rural area south of Nairobi. And what we do now is we actually provide renewable energy and water products on credit to women. So things like solar lamps and clean cook stoves and rainwater tanks. We provide all the distribution and the financing up front to them, and then they repay for their items over time. And then we also hire, we have an entire team of peer educators who choose the different topics that they want to educate their community on, and they go out into all the villages and work with women around the issues that are important to them.
Jen's now the board president of Zawadisha, having gotten it to a point where it makes sense for her to pursue other ventures, which we'll hear about after the break. It's not easy to get all the nutrients we need to keep our bodies healthy for the long run, which is why Ritual, the obsessively researched vitamin for women, comes in handy. Ritual's essentials have all the nutrients most of us don't get from food, all in clean, absorbable forms. It's been about a year since I started using Ritual through this podcast. I've never really been a vitamin person, but I do like the Ritual, and I really like knowing that I have my bases covered from a nutrition standpoint, especially when I'm traveling. I really like that Ritual is traceable and transparent. You can look at the label and read all of their vegan-friendly, sugar-free, non-GMO, gluten-free, and allergen-free ingredients. I don't personally have any food restrictions, but I feel comfortable knowing I'm recommending a vitamin that a lot of listeners can feel good taking. Better health doesn't happen overnight, and right now Ritual is offering listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/explore to start your Ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/explore. This episode is also brought to you by earlybirdcbd.com, one of the largest online marketplaces for premium CBD. If you're not familiar with CBD, it's not psychoactive like THC. People are experimenting with CBD for anxiety, pain, arthritis, seizures, and overall general wellness. I can't speak to all these uses, but I do use CBD for anxiety and menstrual cramps. CBD has been helpful for quieting my mind. I like to pair it with slow walks or a cup of ginger turmeric tea. Earlybirdcbd.com carries tinctures, gummies, capsules, topicals, vape pens, and even CBD for pets. So odds are really good that you'll find what you need in their high-quality products. Earlybirdcbd.com offers fast and free shipping, and for 20% off your order, visit earlybirdcbd.com/explorers and use the discount code EXPLORERS at checkout. That's earlybirdcbd.com/explorers, discount code EXPLORERS for 20% off your order. We're back. So what experiences did you have as a woman in her 20s that made you want to later go on to start a company whose tagline is shredding the patriarchy?
Yeah, well, one of my most cherished experiences was when I first moved to Tahoe and I wanted to get another job tuning skis because that's what I knew how to do. And I went into a ski shop. Well, I went into a number of ski shops, but one ski shop that was actually going to entertain hiring me said to me, well, we don't hire women to tune skis because women sell clothing and the men tune skis. And that obviously is, there's a problem there. And so I tried to talk to them about it, but also, you know, I was 24 and needed a job. And so I couldn't get a job. So I took this job, even though I didn't, you know, I was hired to sell clothing and I told them that I didn't know anything about clothing and I knew more about hard goods and they didn't care. And then In addition to that, there were posters of naked women in the repair shop. And when I went to them and said, you know, I find this to be offensive and it's like, this isn't really the type of like experience in the workplace that I want to have, I was told by the men that I wasn't feminist enough, because if I was a feminist, then I would appreciate the pictures of the naked women on the wall. And so it was my problem.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was one of my first experiences at the age of 24. And then I would say that my experience working at UC Berkeley was positive for the most part, except for different times that I would have to interact with, I'd say, a number of professors who assumed that I didn't know anything about what I was doing because I worked in the outdoors and because I was a woman. And so that was frustrating to have your acumen and your intellect questioned simply because you had an appreciation for the outdoors. And because I purposefully didn't use every 50-cent word that I knew. Like, I'm like, I don't want to sound like you. I would prefer to sound like people. I want to have real conversations with all sorts of people. I don't need to set myself apart with this language. So I don't, I may have gotten into a few arguments about that. And then what else happened? I was one of the co-owners of this whitewater rafting company. And that was also like, you know, a lot of wonderful things with all the rivers that I was able to explore. It also was the first time I'd say that I really understood what it was like to have primarily young men working for me. And even though like all the work that I had done in my 20s, I primarily worked with boys. So whether they were like the clients that we were serving or the participants in the program or even some of my staff, I'd always worked with men and never really had a lot of issues around that until I started, you know, having to manage this team of young men and what I would call like an extreme sport. And I was just called the fun police all the time. When I would say things to them like, hey guys, how about not smoking bowls all morning long in the company vehicle and drinking beers prior to getting out on the river? Because there are people who are putting their lives, they're trusting you, they're putting their lives in your hands. And so both from just a moral perspective and honoring our clients, but also from a risk management perspective, I need you to be sober when the day starts. I took a lot of flack for that and just, you know, all the different things that I was trying to do to run a really proper business. I was met with an incredible amount of hostility and defensiveness. And it all just kind of came down to like, somehow I was trying to impact their experience. And that was really, you know, the first time I'd faced that. And I do believe it was because I was working more on the like adventure, extreme sport side of things. And, you know, I would be told things like, oh, well, people would like you better if you did X, Y, or Z. And I just got really over that. And I feel like, you know, that was definitely a catalyst to think about, you know, what are the ways in which women could be elevated so that we don't have to deal with this misogyny.
So when you founded Coalition Snow, what problem were you looking to solve?
You know, I'd always skied and snowboarded. I started when I was 16. My family never skied, so I didn't have that experience with them. But I joined the ski club in high school, and that's how I got into it. And, you know, living in Flagstaff and then living in Tahoe, living in these mountain communities, it was just sort of like general knowledge that women's equipment was just never as good as men's. Like there was never the same emphasis on quality put in it. And so that seemed problematic both from, you know, wanting the very best equipment because that allows you to advance in the sport, but also just have the most fun and feel comfortable, but then also inherently problematic of like, why do you think we don't deserve the very best? Like, why does the industry think women don't deserve, as you know, equipment that's as good as men's? In addition to that problem, just around the equipment, obviously, like the way that women were represented or not being represented in snow sports was also an issue. And, you know, I remember athletes, this was right about the time that social media was, you know, Facebook in particular was starting to become a platform where people could have a voice. You know, there'd be professional athletes calling out major ski publications saying, why did you publish that photo of me in a bathing suit when you didn't have permission to use that photo, and I provided you with 10 high-res photos of me skiing. So I was like seeing all of that going on too. So there's obviously like this equipment side of things, but then there also was this pervasive, I'd say, like negative representation of women in snow sports. And we thought we could solve both of those problems from a product standpoint, because women are not expected to make hard goods. If we had chosen to come in to the industry and make clothing, everybody would have been like, oh, that's what women do. You're allowed to do that. Thank you for staying in your lane. So we were kind of thinking like, what could we do that would really disrupt snow sports? Well, let's do what only men are supposed to do and then see how they take it.
How do they take it?
They were very confused at first. And you have to remember, like, this was 6 years ago. So it's not like this was that long ago. It feels like forever ago, but it wasn't that long ago. Like, we founded the company in 2014, and I came up with the idea in 2013. So it's 6 years. I'd say at first, they were incredibly dismissive and confused. You know, a lot of it was like, well, women can just buy skis that are made for men. And it's like, okay, but you're not understanding why that's still a problem. Sure, they can, but here's all the issues surrounding that. So that was like one of the consistent pieces of feedback, air quotes, that we received. And then, I mean, definitely people were scared. They are like, who are these women who are using words like patriarchy? And why are they talking about misogyny? And why, like, who are they? And because we were nobodies in the industry, because I worked in the nonprofit side, and no one knew who I was. And so I came into this industry not as an athlete, not working for another major brand. No one knew who I was. So they were like, well, who are you even to think that you can do this? You can't even do it. So that just gave me a lot more fuel to prove them wrong. But yeah, and I think to this day, I think some people still are confused and scared. But then, you know, just with some of the changes that have happened in the industry and just sort of the representation of women and other underrepresented groups, I think we're definitely more accepted, if not embraced at this point.
Yeah, I will say personally, like as I would consider myself an outsider to the ski industry, and it still seems pretty intimidating and fairly insular just in terms of like people knowing each other. And I can see how hard that must have been 6 years ago.
Well, honestly, I feel the same way now. I'm like, you know, like I, even, you know, in the winter outdoor retailer, which is the trade show that's in Denver for the industry, I don't even walk back into the hard goods section. Like, we, you know, it's like the bro section. I'm like, I can't do it. These are not my people. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of people that hold the keys still, like the gatekeepers in snow sports. I don't know who they are. Yeah, it's definitely still a good old boys club where a few women have been able to infiltrate it. But I feel like for myself and for Coalition, we've built our own community and then also found community in the different outdoor activities or, you know, that are not necessarily snow sports related, because they seem a lot less hostile and intimidating. And I still feel that way today.
Okay, you can't see this, but I've got my hand up and I'm taking off companies. One, a cheeky underwear company. Two, a river rafting company. Three, Zawadisha. And four, Coalition Snow. Number five is Jen's latest venture, Sisu Magazine, a gorgeously graphic print magazine dedicated to telling the untold stories of the outdoors. Sisu Magazine feels like a really natural extension to the work that you've done with Coalition Snow. I know it's a completely separate entity, but when you talk about broadening people's experiences and opening up like the definition of what it means to, you know, in Coalition Snow's case, spend time on a mountain, the magazine feels like it's the next step in that evolution.
It is. And thanks for recognizing that, because a lot of people were like, I don't get it. Why aren't you doing a magazine? And I'm like, what do you mean? What don't you get? It makes total sense in my head.
Like, I have a degree in print journalism.
Yeah, you know, but like, I don't know. I feel like I have those conversations a lot where I'm like, this makes total sense to me. What do you mean you don't understand me? Like, okay. But so, yeah, like Sisu definitely, I mean, we last year, the, you know, 20, 17, 18 ski season, you know, at the end of the season, we always sort of reflect back on the season and look at what we've done and what it is that we want to do for the next year. And it became really obvious to us that, you know, after 4 years, there was definitely this, this community and people were showing up, not necessarily because they wanted to buy our skis or snowboards, but because they appreciated the things that we were saying. And because I know how to write, and Lauren Bellow Okerman, our creative director, is a phenomenal artist and graphic designer. It was kind of in our wheelhouse to take a lot of the things, a lot of the conversations that we were already having and put them into a printed piece. And the other thing that was important for us as well is that, you know, to your point, snow sports is insular and it's not representative at all. And that's a problem for us. And snow sports is already so hard to exist in that we feel limited of like what we can really accomplish there. And so by having a magazine that's quarterly and that's not focusing just on snow sports, we felt like we would have an opportunity to work with individuals and tell stories and share art and photography that really represented our values. And I think sort of like a moral imperative, not just in the outdoor industry, but in society at large. And, you know, this idea of just having pages that people can fill, and how this was this huge opportunity for collaboration and growth that we wouldn't be able to have in just making skis.
Sisu launched in January at Winter OR, and it evokes the spirit of Coalition Snow while appealing to a larger base. Sisu is a Finnish word and concept that means persistence and determination in a way that's the opposite of fleeting. It's sustainable strength for the long haul. At Sisu Magazine, they call it grit and guts, which is pretty much Jan in a nutshell. I asked her about the upcoming issue out in June.
June will be the third issue that we have put out. And I, even just saying that, I'm like, why did I agree to do this 4 times a year? But I'm really excited about it. So the theme of the summer issue is revival. And we're looking at things that are sort of emerging, or, you know, things that were old that are now new again. And we've been able to work with a number of really incredible contributors. Some of the pieces that we're working on now is we're able to interview Kenya and Michelle from the Outdoor Journal project and talk about, you know, the movement that they're creating. I feel so lucky that I get to talk to these human beings. So I do for this issue, for the summer issue in particular, I'm doing a lot of the writing, primarily because there's just a budget that needs to be managed. But it's so great for me to be like, it's incredible to be able to talk to all of these people. So, you know, we'll have that feature there. Every issue we have a column that's called Ask Jenny, and Jenny Brusso from Unlikely Hikers takes to her community, and they get to pitch her questions and then she answers them. And in this particular column, she's answering a question from a 64-year-old trans woman who is going to start hiking the Pacific Crest Trail. So even that question and then her response is incredible. I was able to interview a woman whose Instagram, her Instagram handle is Gravel Try Harder. And she's anonymous, so I don't know her real name and she won't tell me. But she's sort of the Celeste Barber of the cycling world.
Who's that?
Okay. You have, go to Instagram right now. You have to look up Celeste Barber. She's a comedian. And what she does is she mocks fashion and models. And so her Instagram is just full of parodies of her pretending to do the things that the models do and just sort of like making fun. It is like, if you're ever feeling bad about yourself, just go to Celeste Barber and binge, just binge on Celeste. You'll feel really good. So Gravel Try Hard, she's doing the same thing, but with the cycling industry, because a lot of the imagery, a lot of the photographs of women cycling are obnoxious. And she is essentially making fun of that in a very, very smart way. So it was like such a treat to be able to talk to her. And then we have another piece around pack animals and how pack animals are actually increasing access to the outdoors for people who like to recreate in all different ways. We have a feature on Mappy Hour and about the sort of like redefining what being in the outdoors means, and that you can actually have a love of the outdoors and recreate in the outdoors in an urban area. And yeah, so that's just a handful of what we have going on, or should I say that's what I've written so far. And we have a few other pieces too. We'll have a piece around the Deer 139 project, and Lindsay Dyer will be contributing again, and just a lot of really great stuff.
So you mentioned blank pages. Do you get excited by blank pages, intimidated? How does it feel when you have a whole issue laid out in front of you that you have yet to source?
Well, so it depends on when you ask me this question. So right yeah. now I feel great about it because I was able to reach out to our contributors and confirm that their content was actually going to come in. I put everything on a spreadsheet. I built out the issue, and now I feel really good. But I would say that at the beginning of March, when our second issue came out, and there was like literally like, okay, what are we going to do now? So this goes back to your question about planning. So yes, I have a spreadsheet that now has everything in it, but I didn't have that at the beginning of March. So there's like this little bit of flying by the seat of your pants. And it is absolutely intimidating to look at a spreadsheet with 80 lines and be like, all right, what are we going to put in here? And oh, I really hope people say yes and want to write or want to be interviewed, because you don't always know what people are going to say. So I'd say a month ago, I probably lost a little bit of sleep, but today I feel really good about it.
I read in an interview that you did, and it was with, I want to say it was like with Outdoor Project when they did that Wild Women series. You wrote Strong Women Have Feelings Too, that one of the things that people might be surprised by if they got to know you is that you are maybe more sensitive than you portray. And I loved hearing that, like, strong women have feelings too. Like, there's more to you than just... You know, when you think about a business person, you also kind of stereotype in terms of what a business person needs to look like.
Right.
So as someone who feels feelings, how do you cope with the highs? And it's such a stereotype again, but it's true. Like, I feel it all the time. I feel like ecstatically happy about what I'm doing and extremely forlorn. How do you cope with that? Like the true roller coaster of like what you've chosen to build your career on?
Yeah. That's a good question. Yeah. I definitely have all the feels all the time. I just, I'm actually a very private person. So there's very few people who know about my personal life, and just in most things that I share, whether it be like on Instagram or in my newsletter, I'd say where I'm probably most vulnerable is on the podcast that Jillian and I do called Juicy Bits. Like, I definitely hope that my mom never listens to it. But I mean, I have a close group of friends that I lean on. And so there's definitely a handful of people who, like, on the daily I call and really have to lean on them, because there are some days where I just don't want to do it anymore because it's just so fucking hard. And I don't know if I can do it anymore. And then you run into all the issues of like, well, if I don't do this, what would I do next? And would anybody want me to do anything for them? Like, you just like, and then like all the self-doubt comes in, and then you go to Instagram and you're like, God, I'm like even bigger loser, you know? And so I just, I have a close circle of friends, like maybe four or five people that I'm like very, very honest with, like honest to probably like to a fault, because I just reveal everything. And so I do have like a supportive, I have people who support me and people who give me advice and people who give me a pep talk when I need it, or like let me cry all over their shirt, or, you know, whatever needs to happen. But I would say that like having those people is really important, and just knowing that like you need to have those people where you can be totally honest. Cause if you just go through day to day, like pretending to be strong, I don't know. Like, I think that would be incredibly destructive. So even though I like choose to share certain things like on social media, it doesn't mean that I'm repressing all of the real feelings that, that I have. I think that that helps. And then, I don't know, I also just try to, I mean, I'm definitely like very introspective. Like, I'm in my head a lot. And I think part of that comes from, you know, I work remotely. So I'm like right now I'm sitting in my home office and I will like be in here all day and I won't likely see another person till tonight. You know, it's like, I spend a lot of time alone, which I'm an introvert. So that works for me. But, you know, I just think a lot about how I've been through some shit before and I figured it out. So maybe all that I need to do is like, just wake up tomorrow and try again. And just, you know, now, you know, in particular, because we just wrapped up our fifth year of Coalition, I've had plenty of the highs and plenty of the lows. And, you know, at some point you just have to decide every day to wake up and do it all over again and to just accept the suffering and that this is now a part of your life. And I think the more that I embrace the uncertainty and embrace the risk, that it's actually easier to cope with rather than trying to control things that I can't control.
Learn more about Coalition Snow and Sisu Magazine by heading to their links in our show notes. Thank you to Jen, as always, for taking the time to talk. You can find Jen on her Instagram and follow along on her bike journey in Nepal at Yo Gorecki. Thanks to our sponsors, Merrill, Ritual, and earlybirdcbd.com. As usual, all of the links are listed in the show notes and via the episode landing page on she-explorers.com. If you enjoy this podcast, there are two easy ways to help support us. First, spread the word. You can do this by leaving a review where you listen or sharing the podcast with a friend. Second, join our She Explores podcast Facebook group. It's really wonderful to be able to connect with other listeners. And I love seeing all of you connect with each other and ask each other for outdoor advice and share in each other's triumphs and challenges. Music is by Lee Rosevere, Kay Engel, and Josh Woodward. Until next week, have fun out there.